Welcome to the Manufacturing the Future podcast, the show designed to help you future-proof your manufacturing operations. Each episode features interviews with innovative manufacturing leaders and subject matter experts who share their insights and best practices about the technology that can empower you to streamline operations, prepare your organization for what lies ahead, and continue to keep our world turning. I'm your host, Carrie Jordan, Vice President of Product Management at Epicor. Now, for today's episode. Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. Welcome to our show where we're talking with the business leaders who are transforming the manufacturing industry, innovating for the future, and using digital technologies to really change our world. And today's guest is just that. I am so happy to be speaking with Jane Mosbacher Morris, the founder and CEO of To The Market. She has such an inspiring story. She started her business with a vision of democratizing access to the global supply chain and providing makers around the world with the economic empowerment that comes from safe, global, dignified, and fairly paid work. To The Market offers a turnkey solution for ethical manufacturing. It connects a syndicated network of sustainable suppliers, and it promotes better business without sacrificing speed or innovation. Jane, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me, Carrie.
Well, to get us started, let's get to know you. Can you tell us about your background and why you started To The Market?
Well, I started To The Market because I believe fundamentally that the retail manufacturing industry can and should be reimagined. But how I even discovered that that was an opportunity was a little bit of a winding road. So I started my career in the public sector. I worked at the State Department in counterterrorism. My primary focus area was helping women fight terrorism. So this was when I was doing a lot of work in Afghanistan. And I really came away with the conclusion that absolutely there's a role for the public sector, but that the private sector is so, so impactful. And if you can leverage market forces to drive change, you can really have an outsized impact both on, you know, social and environmental opportunities, but also you can make a lot of money as well. And so I didn't know what that would look like. So I started to study. I did an MBA while I was still at the State Department at Columbia Business School and was looking at emerging economies and discovered the multi-trillion dollar industry of retail manufacturing. So certainly an interesting pivot from working on counterterrorism, but one that ultimately got me to a place where I realized that there was a huge industry, an industry that was broken, in need of reimagining, and one that I felt like I could really help to address.
That's wonderful. That's really interesting. So where are you based now, by the way?
So our teams moved all across the country and actually all over the world. So we used to be based in New York. And with COVID, like so many businesses, we shut down our headquarters and went distributed as a team. I personally moved to a farm in Kentucky, but our team is everywhere from France to Bangladesh. So, I mean, truly all over. And then in the United States, I mean, East Coast to West Coast.
That's interesting. I mean, talk about the changing nature of work. To move to a farm in Kentucky, that sounds so wonderful.
It is. It's just as wonderful as it sounds, I have to say.
Good for you. And actually, other wonderful things to be excited about. To The Market recently ranked in the top 20% of the Inc. 5000 list. Of course, this is, you know, the most prestigious ranking of America's fastest growing private companies. So congratulations.
Thank you.
Absolutely. You're growing fast. Your technology is being leveraged by very well-recognized retailers. As a leader, how do you support such growth in your business?
Great question. So, I mean, you know, growing is hard. It's hard to actually grow your business. It's hard to maintain a business, let alone grow a business. And with growth comes a tremendous amount of pain. I mean, it is not without significant sacrifice, whether that's sacrifice around heartache, time, sleep, stress, whether that is around the uncertainty that it creates among your team as you bring in new people, as you open new accounts and have to elevate your standard operating procedures. You know, growth does not come without serious costs. And I think it's important as entrepreneurs, and for us to remember that, you know, oftentimes we think growth is this sort of like groovy, all upside sort of rainbow to chase, but we should also be sort of wise in remembering that with growth comes significant sort of sacrifice and also risk. So I will share that. How we continue to pursue growth is, I think, setting really clear expectations among our teammates as to what we're trying to achieve and why we're trying to achieve that, and then putting in place measures that actually allow us to achieve those numbers. So I can't just say to my team, I want us to do $100 million in revenue. Well, the team is going to say, well, you know, how much does it cost to acquire a customer? Like, how many meetings would I need to have to actually, you know, get that much in our pipeline? How many staff members would we need to have to actually adequately support that revenue number? So I think setting up structures around, you know, how much do you want to grow? Why do you want to grow? How do you want to grow? How will we measure whether we're sort of progressing against our growth? Those are all really critical questions to ask ourselves.
And how did you go about establishing that as a structure within the business? I mean, as a leader, I really respect that you are helping your team to really understand the expectations, kind of creating measures so that it's a process that they're participating in. How do you then establish the structure for them to work within or to be recognized within?
Yeah, I think structure, especially in this day and age of like being somewhat distributed, at least like folks are like at least somewhat remote, if not all remote, which I think is awesome because it gives you access to extraordinary talent and it allows populations to participate in your business that may have not been able to if you were pushing a sort of 9-to-6 in office requirement. That said, it's incredibly important to create sort of policies, procedures, what we call routines and rituals that allow us to stay in touch as a team, have regular touch bases, and to have a way in which we feel like each teammate feels fully involved and up to date. So that means everything from, you know, we have a steady cadence of Monday, Friday, all hands, where every single member of our team has to participate. We have different weekly standups on sort of core topics, whether that be finance, cash flow, pipeline review, et cetera. And then we have forums in which we're constantly in sort of discussion around client opportunities or operational issues that we utilize Slack for that. But structure is critical when you are distributed. And we've been very, I would say, thoughtful about putting in place as much structure as possible to allow us to thrive.
That's great. Okay, let's turn to realizing that vision that you originally set out for with To The Market. Ethical manufacturing, transforming the global supply chain through technology. When you are working with business leaders who may say, ethical manufacturing is important to me, it's important to my customers, to my stakeholders, sustainability is important to me. But maybe they'd say, our margins are already so thin, or, you know, I have other investment priorities that I have to balance. How do you encourage them to make the change?
Yeah, it's very common for people to assume that making more ethical and sustainable sourcing decisions means that you have to pay a significant premium. And I fundamentally believe that that's not the case. I think it's absolutely possible to find economies of scale around certain decisions that you're making on sourcing that allow you to work with more ethical and sustainable suppliers and with more sustainable materials. Oftentimes, I think people feel like ethical and sustainable manufacturing assumes you have a small supplier or you have a very niche supplier or a niche service provider, i.e. a company only specializes in, you know, the most premium product because of their ethical and sustainable focus. And, you know, some of To The Market's largest accounts are very price accessible. TJ Maxx, Nordstrom Rack, Walgreens. I mean, these are clients who have, you know, I think a very reasonable price point, and yet they do make it work. And so I think it's being smart around saying like, hey, where is there a product that I have significant scale? So I have economies of scale that can be deployed within this. where there's an opportunity for me to look at alternative suppliers, like alternative manufacturers that are operating more ethically and sustainably, where I could actually move production into one of these facilities that's probably much more aligned with what I espouse publicly. Because I would argue that oftentimes clients think that they still are in a safe position by continuing to produce with suppliers that are perhaps not ethical or sustainable, and that will continue to be sort of available to them forever and ever, amen. And I fundamentally believe that that window is closing very quickly with the rise of regulation and the rise of technology that helps us better understand the circumstances of things being manufactured, and regulation continuing to get tighter on forcing companies to make clear how they have, in fact, vetted the suppliers to prove out, you know, forced labor isn't taking place, child labor isn't taking place, massive, you know, sustainability violations aren't taking place. The compliance and risk to companies to not making these changes continues to increase. And so I think the window is closing where I think people can even continue to get away with the way we've manufactured in, you know, at least the United States for the last 20 years.
I could absolutely see that, especially with technology in the global supply chain providing more and more transparency and visibility across the suppliers that are involved and the participants. So naturally, we're going to learn more about these organizations. Can you talk more about the role of digital technology when it comes to the global supply chain? In what ways have you helped retailers and the makers within, even artisans within the global supply chain participate? What was the outcome and how does it benefit them?
Well, one of the many fascinating things about sourcing and manufacturing is that it is such an analog industry. So it's an industry that still cuts purchase orders over email, and it tracks production on WhatsApp, and it runs pricing algorithms on Excel or Google Sheets. And I jokingly said, you know, to people when I was starting this business, like, I'm fascinated that I have more visibility into the process of my Domino's pizza being prepared on my Domino's app than these buyers have into multi-million dollar orders. I mean, that is just really something else. And so much of what To the Market has been focused on is digitizing the core workflows associated with sourcing and manufacturing, and also digitizing many of the vetting and monitoring of our suppliers, as well as even quantifying the impact of the sourcing and manufacturing decisions that our clients are making. So much of our work is really around how can we make this industry more transparent? You can drive transparency with technology. So what are the technological products that have to be built that are commercially viable, i.e., we have to operate within the realm of reality of how people work in this industry. So given that those confines, where exactly does technology need to be implemented? How can we implement it? And how can we, you know, really lead on becoming the ethical and sustainable sourcing and manufacturing company?
Can you share some of the success stories that you've seen for those companies that have actually made the change? What has been the outcome?
Well, I think, you know, when we think of companies switching from where they are on their existing supply chain to where we begin to work with them, I think they are able to see similar price points for the product that they're sourcing, but they're able to see significant changes in the impact of their sourcing decisions, i.e., a big box retailer could be ordering the same units from us that they used to be ordering from somebody else. But instead of just getting the product, they're also getting data like liters of water saved, kilowatts of energy saved, carbon emissions avoided, fair wages created by sourcing through our platform. So they're getting sort of two for one, right? Like they're getting this sort of ESG impact data and product that's at a price that's competitive with the same sort of procurement budget. So oftentimes those numbers are really, really compelling, meaning, you know, you're talking about hundreds of thousands of fair wages created in a single order, which is really powerful when you think about how that is impacting communities around the world.
You're absolutely right. So compelling, the business impact, but I mean, and more importantly, the people impact, the human impact, the community impact. So what's next? I mean, what we're talking about, I think, is all very cutting edge and, you know, just it's forward thinking. But if you were to look even further in terms of what's next for the global supply chain, speaking of the data that you are helping organizations to collect, understand, gain insights from, what are some of the trends around sustainability or around innovation that you are excited about?
I am excited to see the consumer and buyers and procurement managers begin to have more information associated with what ethical and sustainable sourcing looks like so that they're then empowered to make better decisions. I mean, so much of our theory of change to the market is that with better data, with more information, these procurement managers and or these buyers will make better decisions, but they previously haven't had access to this information because the brokerage model that has run rampant in the United States for so long was deeply opaque. And so much of what we get excited about is being able to share data with our clients about their suppliers and be able to share not only images, but qualitative descriptions and even quantitative scores associated with these suppliers. And with that, I think it really encourages them to want to move more and more of their portfolio over to the market because they want to have that data and they want to do more of it now that they know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I see how that could unlock some real success stories, revenue generating opportunities, cost cutting, but at the same time, advancing our global needs as a global organization to really, as you had said, you know, promoting better business through the organization, but also just creating a better world for all of us who participate in it. So that's wonderful. For business leaders who, you know, are participating in the make, move, sell economy, who maybe are interested in getting started or to even further improve their existing sustainability operations or innovation efforts around sustainability, what advice would you share?
The macro sort of storyline would be progress over perfection. So you don't have to wait until you're a certain size or you're a certain profitability or you are have a certain type of client to begin to make progress on your journey towards a more ethical and sustainable sourcing and manufacturing process. I often encourage people to look at raw materials as a place in which they can start. That could be, you know, raw materials for a core product, for sort of an ancillary product, and really ask themselves, what would it look like if I moved, you know, my conventional cotton to an organic cotton or my polyester to a recycled polyester? Like, what kind of savings and impact could I achieve by doing that? And oh, by the way, what kind of new client or clients could I be attracting because I've invested in that sort of better sourcing decision? Oftentimes, it also means, you know, looking at small things around you. Like, what is it? What kind of gifts do you give people who join your company? What kind of coffee do you stock if you still have an office? Like, is that in itself fair trade or organic? I mean, people often think that they have to sort of move to a different country and become sort of nonprofit worker to have an impact. And my sort of argument is always like, you have daily purchasing power decisions that you're making where you could be making perhaps different decisions that could be not that consequential to you, but very consequential to somebody on the other end of that decision. Whether that's, you know, committing that you want to source from more diverse suppliers, or that's you deciding that, you know, I'm going to move 20% of my production into a sustainable material, or I want to move 10% of my production into this sort of more ethical factory. There is always room for improvement. It's just a function of us taking the leap and getting started.
I could see how even just a small change could have a big impact. And maybe for organizations who are concerned about that big investment, you don't have to make a big investment to get started. It could be just the small changes, like you said, even the coffee that you serve in the office. That's really interesting. Okay, well, this is such a great conversation. As we wrap up, Can you share the best way for people to get to know more about you and the work that you do, as well as to the market?
Well, we are always excited to continue to grow our community. We have, of course, our website at tothemarket.com. You can follow along on social media. Our handle is at Let's Go TTM. And we always encourage folks to buy the book that I wrote. I wrote a book with Penguin Random House called Buy the Change You Want to See. That is available where most books are sold. And it gives us all a little bit of sort of brainstorming around how we as individuals or as professionals can integrate more ethical and sustainable purchasing into our everyday life.
Thank you so much. All right. Thank you to my guest, Jane Mossbacher-Morris, the founder and CEO of To The Market. Jane, we look forward to seeing what's next for you.
Thank you, Carrie, for having me.
Thank you for listening to Manufacturing the Future, brought to you by Epicor. For the latest episodes, search for the show on your podcast platform of choice. Make sure to subscribe to get notified when a new episode is released. To learn more about Epicor, visit epicor.com.